And now it is my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker from Fresno, Thomas, with 9 years. Let's get up for Thomas.
Hey, everybody. I'm Thomas. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. Good-looking group. You know, people ask me all the time, and this woman, I ran into a woman when I came in. She's all, you the speaker? I said, yeah, I'm the speaker. She's like, you get nervous doing these things? I'm like, no, I don't get nervous. She's like, what are you doing in the women's restroom? I used that same joke 3 years ago when I spoke here. You guys forgot it. These things are cool, though. Like, I want to welcome everybody that's here, new or kind of returning. I'm a returner to recovery. I am. And I've spoke different places around the valley. I have a friend that's normal. He doesn't get it. But he came to hear me speak, and he was asking for directions. You know how you give directions where, you know, if you go down this street, turn right, you see this kind of tree, some type of prehistoric tree. And if you get to the railroad tracks, you went too far. I'm telling him these kind of directions. Because, you know, you ever been to the Alano Club? You guys got a Alano Club, if I tell you, right?
Yeah.
You ever been to the Fresno one?
Yeah.
You ever been to the San Francisco one? They're all the same. San Francisco, right? They all look the same. He's like, how am I going to know that it's you guys? And I go, oh, you'll know. Just like tonight when me and my girlfriend come walking up, I was like, you can see us from a fucking mile away. Can't you see us? All the vapor, now it's vapor. The smoking, the vapor, the eyes back and forth, all the time. Everybody talking, nobody listening. This is like the only time where one person talks around here. And aren't we all the same? I told him, oh, you'll know. And when he showed up there, I'm like, oh, you found it? He's like, yeah, I saw you guys. So stick around for after the meeting. That meeting takes place after, too. Like, some of the most important things that have happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I arrived here at 14 years old is when I first arrived here. You know, so one of the things I've noticed is that if you really look and really pay attention, there's something really special going on around here. You know, like, I guess the best place to start for me would be the beginning. So, you know, I was born in 1971. No, just kidding. I'm not going to go that far. I was born in Fresno. My grandmother raised me. My grandfather had took off when I was about 5. My mom and dad took off when I was about 3. So what happened to us was we had a woman that had never done anything other than pick cotton out in the fields outside of the valley here, having to find a job. And we lived, if you know Fresno, Dakota and Marks. And we lived in a trailer park. And in that trailer park, not only was I like bad enough to be in a trailer park, didn't want anybody to know it, but we only had a single wide. And, you know, double wides were even better than that. But I remember early on in school, what I would do is I would walk to the back of the park and hop over the fence, and I would walk to school because she had to work at the IRS. She retired from the IRS too. And I would walk through the houses so that other kids at school didn't know that I lived in that trailer park. And I remember thinking back on it now, like there was an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old kid having this conversation with himself. You know, like, oh, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with not having a mom and dad around. Luckily, my grandmother looked really young. So people wouldn't know until I called her grandmother that she was my grandma. They figured that was my mom, you know. But going up through school, I kind of like figured everything out. I was kind of like a social chameleon. If you saw me in middle school and high school, I was one of those guys that was everything. I was kind of like a jock, kind of like a stoner, kind of hung out at the box, you know, with the F-14ers, with the Mexican guys, with the black guys. I had friends everywhere. It was like a social chameleon. I got along really, really good. I played soccer. I played guitar. I was always a part of the group, if not a leader of the group, always coming up with plans. The only thing that messed me up was being around you ladies. I don't know if anybody else has that problem around here. I get around you guys, and everybody's raising their hand. I get around girls in school, man, I just get shaking inside, you know, like the insides just start shaking. You know, I'll be 48 in January, and you guys still make me nervous. You still make me nervous. But me and my friend Jeremy Osborne were walking to our elementary school after school one day, and they were having something go on at the cafeteria, and I remember we were walking by the school, and we heard something up there, and we walked up to the back of the cafeteria, and what you saw was something similar to this, kind of. There was like a door and the stairs going up, you know, where they had the assemblies in the school, and up there on the stage, you could see the stairs led up and up. And up there was a stage sideways, kind of like this. Like if you were standing over there, that was me. And up there on that stage was this beautiful creature named Teresa. And she was trying out for the talent show. And she had the microphone. And she had those, I don't know if you're old enough for this, the zip around Rag City Blues jeans. Anybody remember those things? And the Forrest Gump, this guy's raising his hand, the Forrest Gump, the Nikes, you know, the red stripe, that's a Cortez. If you don't know the models of the Nikes, but the Nike Cortez, she had that feathered hair. She had those roach clips they sold at the Fresno Fair. You know what I mean? And she's just killing it, man. Killing it. And she was doing a new song, Don't Stop Believing by Journey. I know you guys are young guys, but maybe you've seen Glee. You seen Glee? Yeah, it's on Glee. But I could see it. You see how I'm describing that? Like, I could see the colors, like in Technicolor. Now, I keep aging myself, like in HD, 4K. For you young guys. But she was killing it, man. And I could not get close to her. I've been watching her since the third grade. Anyways, me and Jeremy in his parents' garage, we'd found Southern Comfort. And poured it into a little bottle and took it with us. And as she was singing up there, we went around the side, and I took that first pull of that Southern Comfort. And a lot of people go, man, that's too sweet. I love Southern Comfort. And I just took a pull of that. It went down. I don't know what happens to you guys, but it went down and boom, bounced off my feet. I don't know if that happens to you. Does it happen to you? I'm like, boom. My hair goes, whoo. You know what I mean? It's, whoo. You know what I'm saying? And she finished, and she come trotting down those stairs just like it was right over here. And not only was I able to go up to her, I mean, I went right up to her. I got up close. I looked her right in the eyes, and I told her, I've been watching you for a long time. And I don't know what I was saying, but she was liking it. And I was looking her eyeball to eyeball. And she was laughing, and I was connecting. And 20 minutes later, I had my first kiss. Alcohol worked for me from the start. It took away the fear. In fact, that's all I ever wanted to be. I could do that. I mean, not kissing, but I could do those kind of relationships with guys. But I tell you what, you find something, and you see how I see that so clearly? I can't remember where my fucking PG&E is due today. I remember Teresa. If your first drink was an event, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't remember my first ice cream cone. Do you? And you find something like that that's going to do for you what you can't do for yourself. Something that's going to give you a new freedom and a new happiness. Something that's not going to make you not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Well, let's talk about it. You know, I get to drinking, man, and all my fear goes away. I can't even barely take a class for a month without dropping out. But if you get me drinking, I'm ready to start a business with you. See, so you find something like that, and I'm already running out of time. That's the first drink. The first drink for me was very, very important. And you see, it does something for me that it doesn't do for normal people. And this lady that was up here reading it, you find something that does that for you, something that makes me be here, present with you, be able to look you in the eyes, be able to be that person I really always wanted to be, and you don't replace it with something else, people like us, you will not stay here. I tell you from experience, because I've been sober before. 9 years, he mentioned, is true. I had 13 years before. From that first drink, I ended up moving through life, finding a really beautiful, smart woman. Don't we find the most awesome people, guys, in here? And just wrecked her. I should say the disease wrecked her. By the time I was 23 years old, I was coming into a treatment program with my current wife. She was 6 months pregnant. In the first part of our book, there's a story called Bill's Story. Anybody ever read Bill's Story? And there's a part in there in Bill's Story whenever he's in a treatment center, and they're giving him and his wife the talk. And that's what was happening to me in the summer of 1994, toward the end of 1994. And it says there in Bill's Story that they did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea. They were having a conversation about what are we going to do about Bill without including Bill in the conversation. I know there's people in here that have that. You ever have them having a conversation like, what are we going to do about Thomas, but they're not asking you? That's where it had gotten. I had started a business. We're the most studious people I know. If you can put your mind to it, by 23 I'd opened a business. I like to play paintball, not ping pong. People always come up to me after the meeting and say, like, you played ping pong like Forrest Gump? No, paintball, like I shoot you in the face. I did paintball alcoholically too. I mean, I didn't just play at Blackbeard's with the kids. No, I wanted to be a professional paintball player. And there is actually such a thing, except they don't pay you, which means you're really not professional. However, I traveled all around the country playing this sport, trying to do it for a living. And by that time, I started a business doing custom paintball guns. Me and my partner, at 23 years old, we were bringing in $15,000 a month, 1994. So that's a lot of money right now. Thanks, buddy. Rolling. And sober. I would have periods of sobriety, which was always followed by, what'd she say? An ever worse relapse. I find powers greater than myself all the time. I always had. I found it in Teresa that day. I found it in paintball. You find it in here. You can find power in here. There's power in here tonight. If you can be still enough, you can almost feel the electricity that happens in here with the laughter. If you're laughing at my shit, welcome to AA. Normal people don't laugh at this. You know what I'm saying? At 23 years old, my partner did not know I was an alcoholic addict because I never told him. And I had like a year and a half sober, and all of a sudden, all the accounts are empty. What happened is I started drinking a little bit after work, after we were doing our custom stuff. And then before you know it, the phenomenon of craving took over. And next thing you know, our accounts are empty. He's wondering what to happen. And my little Asian wife, she's trying to tell him and his dad, who was our investor, no, Thomas is an alcoholic. He's drinking. And Todd's like, no. Something's wrong. Like, we need a statewide APB. Somebody kidnapped him. She's like trying to raise her hand, little Asian lady. Alcoholic. I mean, she was there. I used to be an ice cream truck driver in the 80s. I was the dude with the Bon Jovi hair and the spandex shorts. You saw me out there with selling the missile pops. She was there when I robbed those people blind. So she knew, this is what happens to Thomas when he starts drinking. And my partner says, no. And then, at that time, there was something relatively new where these machines where you could go put a card in and get money out. They called them ATMs. Remember those? Did you know they have cameras on those? I did not know that. So Todd, my business partner, went. His dad was really connected in Fresno. That's how we were able to get started so early. I'd like to tell you, I built that on my own. It's not the truth. I build relationships really well. We're the kind of people, I'm one of those, except for guys. Like Thomas is like the greatest worker we ever had. Except for that. Best friend I ever had. Except for that. We have a very unique personalities around here. Don't we? And Todd knew that person, the sober Thomas. Anyways, the videos on those things, it showed the incredible shrinking Thomas. You know, like that fourth day you haven't eaten? You know those days? The videos that show Leon Thomas is shrinking. Putting like blank sheets of paper in, getting 300 out. So Todd's like, holy shit. So so I made the phone call. You know that phone call you got to make. And I'm a crier. Any other criers in here? It's okay. You can admit it. I'm a crier, man. I wasn't faking it. I get to the bottom or I get to the end. I have to be physically stopped. Either I run out or you stop me. Put me in a box. Concrete box. I have never stopped when I had something. A craving beyond my mental control. is what we talk about around here. That's powerless. Powerless is not I can't drink. Powerless really is I probably will if I don't find something better. If I don't find something that can do for me what that does. That was in 94. So I was in a small room in this treatment program that my wife had got us into. She was in the program too, the significant other group. And, you know, I remember they gave me the paper, and it was a paper like this. Many of you guys are probably familiar with this, you know. It was a paper, and it was real short and simple. It was like I was going to come to all the things in the group. I was going to do all the work they asked me to do. I was not going to put any mood-altering substance in my body, alcohol, drugs, anything. And I remember signing it. You know, when you're at that bottom part, I could barely sign the thing. I think I would have cut off both of my legs to have a chance to be a dad. I had a six-month-old son. And I was crying my eyes out. And I meant it. It wasn't fake alligator tears. I can do that too. But this wasn't fake. It's real. And I remember that day. I'd have done anything to get sober. A week later, we're in the little circle. We got the little piece of paper that has all the little smiley faces. They call them emojis now, but they used to have a sheet with all the different... You know, I'm apprehensive. I'm angry. I'm anxious. That's the way I felt about it. I'm looking around. I'm like, this dude lost his construction company. You're going to tell me about my marriage? You know, a week before that, I had to cut off my legs to have a chance to be a father again. Now I'm like, these people are full of shit. I ended up almost getting kicked out of this program. And this guy named Barry and his wife Mary ran that program. That was the summer of 95. And I see Mary about once or twice a month. She's one of the most important people in my life. Barry was the first person to ever say, nope. It wasn't like, your personality is not going to get you out of this one. I was like, well, you can't kick me out of here. I paid $5,000 to be in here. My grandmother paid $5,000 for me to be in there. Can't kick me out. I tried to choke Barry. He could have pressed charges. I said, what about her, my wife? He said, oh, she could stay. She could stay in the other group. So he told me if I started going to three meetings a day, AA or NA, get it signed, I could come back in the end of the program. So that's what I started doing, you know. I was rollerblading to meetings. No one see those anymore. I was late, you know, my hectic schedule. My first group that I started going to was Northeast Fellowship in Clovis. The meeting was upstairs. It was on 3rd Street. Every time I drive by there, sometimes I'll park there and pray because I'm so grateful for what happened there. I started going to meetings there, and what started happening to me in these new meetings was this internal condition that we need to get in touch with was going on, you know, that grinding motion. We were living with my wife's in-laws, or my in-laws, her parents, and I could tell, I had this sneaking suspicion. You know how we can tell? Because we're mind readers, you know. Don't you have, like, pyrokinetic skills? Don't you know what everybody's thinking? I knew that he was talking to her dad was probably trying to talk her into leaving me, and he was probably right. And secretly inside, I kind of knew that was probably the best thing to do because Thomas was going to get loaded again. If my history said anything, I knew I was going to get loaded again, but I was doing everything I could to stay in there, so I was really, really pissed off and really, really scared. I was going to these meetings, and I just knew one day I was going to come home. They already had me in the garage. I was sleeping on a cot with a sleeping bag on it because Thomas was unpredictable. Thomas had been clean and sober before. Thomas had said he was never going to do it again before. So I'm making it to meetings late, rollerblading in there, hating everything about AA. I just hated everything about AA. I don't like your sayings. I don't like that crappy coffee, you know. Anyways, I'm sitting in those meetings, and there was one guy who passed away 3 years ago. His name is Bill Noble. Nobody sat next to Bill. Bill sat in the back. He was like the big bookiest, crotchetiest, you know, angriest guy in the room talking about the big book, doing like what you guys did with the smashed. Smashed. I like that. I sat next to Bill. I guess so nobody else would sit around me. I don't know what it was, but that day, there was one day I came in late, I sat down, and one of the things I really hated about AA is it seemed like there's a whole bunch of stories. Like, I got CPS involved in my life, she's going to leave, they're going to find these checks that I did not have, all the credible shrieking Thomas, they're going to figure that out pretty soon, she's going to leave, I'm a failure, I got real problems in my life, and you're talking about sheep and shepherds? Stories about you got to give it away to keep it. Nothing makes sense here. I can't say, like, I'm feeling really crappy today because somebody's going to try to teach me a lesson with one of your little stories. And I got real problems, man. Like, tell me what to do, I'll do it. Don't tell me a story. This is the way I came in. This is the way I was. And this is the way I see people here today. And you know what? I get it. I get it, but you're going to have to let it go. And one day I came in late, and Bill Noble, who I did not like, he leans over and he goes, "You missed it." And I was like, motherfuckers. It's exactly what I hate about, you know it's going to be some Yoda thing. Screw him. I mean, I don't care what Bill Noble thinks. 15 minutes in the meeting, I'm like, what was it? What did I miss? He leans in and he goes, "What you were supposed to hear." I'm like, motherfucking moron. Screw him. I don't give a shit what Bill Noble thinks. But if you're like me, we get up to do the Lord's Prayer, we're doing the chant, and I look around for Bill, and I was like, it was upstairs, so there was windows right here, and down there was this dirt lot, and he had this white van, which is another reason I didn't like him. Some Buffalo Bill, Silence of the Lambs van. And he was a mechanic. He always wore like a coveralls. His hands were dirty because he worked as a mechanic. You know what I mean? And deep underneath there, I got a GED, but he was beneath me. This booming ego of ours, you know what I'm saying? But I saw him. He was trotting out to his van. It was a new meeting. He was going back to work. And I found myself standing in front of him. I don't remember running down the stairs, but I had to because he was almost to his van when I saw him up there. I've thought about this in the past before, and I ran out to him. I go, Bill, what was I supposed to hear? He goes, how the fuck am I supposed to know what you were supposed to hear? But here's what happened. Here's what happened. That's why I say, don't think what happens before and after this meeting is not the program, because it can be. That kid that ran out there, as much as I hated everything, I was reaching out, help. We can't say it. It's not easy to say, but we can say it in other ways. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness. Don't they say that's indispensable, is what they say around here. It's right there in our program. If you don't have those three things, you will not stay sober. That's what our program says. Very few places does it say you need this stuff, otherwise you will get loaded. If you're not somewhat honest, open-minded, and willing, you will not stay sober. That's what the book says. That's my experience. My little feet running out there shows my willingness. I didn't know what to do. I didn't like your answer, but I had very limited options. And he sat with me. He didn't call his shop or anything. Turned out this guy named Rich owned the shop, who was a member too. And he figured, whatever, maybe he saw us out there. But in his van, you just know he had a couple of big books, didn't he? And he asked me about, which I later discovered was helping me with step two. He started talking to me about listening and hearing. He said, listening is kind of like, he said, I notice you don't listen, and I notice you're late. I notice you're looking at the clock. I notice when certain people share, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm telling him, no. It was true, though. He talked to me about listening and hearing. He said, listening, hear, first of all, nobody can come to a meeting for you. It's like eating. And you have to do it every day. Can you imagine going to Hometown Buffet? We don't have any more anymore, those anymore. But you imagine going there and being like pissed off because it's like everybody's eating and I'm just like, where's my food? You have to get your own. He said, I don't know what you're supposed to hear, but you better start listening because only you can hear for you, only you can come to meetings for you. And I started thinking about that. Inside, too, I had this internal condition going on, which we all have, just full of resentment and fear. Not only was I always thought to myself, I would never do what my dad did. There's no way I'm leaving my boy. And here I'm sitting in these meetings, 2 months in. And inside there, I call it the meat grinder. You know what I mean? What's going to happen if? What's going to happen when? What about those blank sheets of paper in the ATM? What's going to happen if? What's going to happen when? What's going to happen when she finds out about all those girls that you've been messing around with? What's going to happen when Nick, my father-in-law, talks her into leading, which he probably should? Not only are you like your father, at least he left. This is the voices going on. They call it the committee around here. You know what the committee is? So if you're new and then you're talking about the voices and you wonder, you know, to yourself, what voices? It's those voices that just said, what voices? These resentments were so thick, resentments at you, at the man, at Clovis PD. I hated him worse than the Fresno PD because the Clovis PD didn't like long hairs and I had long hair. They're picking on me. I was resentful of myself. I was resentful at her for not standing up to her dad. I was resentful. I was scared. And it's going on inside of me. I'm sitting in these new meetings, you know, and they call on me and I'd be like, oh, I'm grateful to be here. Bullshit. I was not grateful to be there. I was suffering on the inside. And our book says that more than most people, the alcoholic is very much the actor. We spent a big chunk of our book to talk about this acting that we do. Big bunch of actors we are. And that's what I was doing, just putting on a smiley face as best I could. That's how you deal with life, right? You just fake it. That's what I did. And under the table, I got the leg going. My leg's like this. Grateful to be sober. Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing the straws through the styrofoam cups. You know, tearing a little ring off, put it in the middle. It's like a little recovery satellite. You know, dying inside. Dying inside. You know? And here's another sign of willingness. There's no way I was going to let anybody see me in a bad light, even though I'm all sucked up and my life's completely destroyed. But one day there was somebody sharing in that meeting at Northeast Fellowship, and that grinder was going on. And she's going to leave, and they're going to find out, and blah, 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 blah. And I stood up as they're sharing. Now, I'm no veteran to AA in 1995, but I knew you didn't stand up and say nothing when somebody's sharing. I stood up and said, I need a sponsor. This guy's sharing, you know. And the craziest, kookiest, big bookiest guy in the room says, I'll sponsor you. I was like, and he's like, go ahead and sit down. You know. So I guess my message is this. My alcoholism and drug addiction brought me here. I was at a place where I could have some willingness. How do I know if somebody has willingness? The same way I know if I have willingness. I do a lot of talk. Willingness is not intentions. I really, really thought, and sometimes do, I meet with my sponsor every Tuesday night. And one of the ideas that I have to smash over and over again, besides the problem, the thing about the first drink, is this idea that just because it's my intentions doesn't mean the world works that way. The world does not judge you by your intentions. The world judges you by your actions. You cannot get locked up for thinking about robbing a bank. You cannot. Willingness is not intentions. Willingness is your feet doing this. How do I know if I'm willing? Not with this. With this. How do I know that I'm willing to make amends? When you're hearing crazy, odd sounds like, I need to talk to you about something. I think it's a good idea to make amends. I think I should think about how I'll make amends. I think I'm going to make amends. Never make amends. You know what I'm saying? So willingness is important. And that's what I'm telling you. Me running out to Bill Noble, him spending the time with me, it created something inside of me. Now, I was an atheist, I thought. Turns out I was an agnostic. So I had a hard time with, and Bill Noble was saying things that day, and I was like really just enthralled with him, man. And he was just talking. He opens up the book, and we're in the chapter of the agnostic. He's like, you ever wonder about this stuff? I'm like, yeah, I kind of did. Like, I like Star Wars. I do. Think about it, the Force. Young farm boy, damsel in distress, evil, darkness, fear, pain, anger. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking to him about this stuff. He's like, do you ever pray? And I was like, no. And he's like, are you willing to pray? And I said, yeah, yeah. He said, you ever think that you could pray and go to the meeting, and through the meeting, through listening, you might be able to get an answer? And I was like, oh, I don't know. He's like, no, is it possible? I'm not saying, is it true? Is it possible you could pray and get an answer by going to an AA meeting and listening? And I said, yeah, it's possible. That's a long ways from, I'm an atheist. It's a long ways. That man who I hated did a lot for me that day. And what she read, the other person read, intensive work with other alcoholics. He shared experience, strength, and hope with the idea that it was possible. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. First of all, if you're there, that indicates that the current time you are insane. It's kind of judgy, isn't it? It's a little judgy. The insanity. But he spent the time to talk to me about that. It came to believe that a power could is possibility. I read things wrong. I hear things wrong. My self-will run riot, makes me see things different and hear things different than what's actually happening. Step two to me in the summer of 95 was came to know that God would. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say nothing about knowing shit. It says came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could. Not that God would. That it's possible. This is the kind of things Bill was doing for me. You know what I mean? So pay attention around here. You may be able to get your life saved. And now today, all these years later, I'm not going to have time to get into my relapse. I can't even see the clock. How much?
7:40.
Is it 7 right now?
Yep, 7 minutes.
Okay. I only have time to get into that. That man helped me that day. Today, now, it's been 27 years I've been coming around these rooms, and I have 9. So you do the math. Smart guy. You do the math. All right. That atheist kid who was an agnostic, today I would no more leave my house without doing step 11, without seeking to improve this conscious contact with a God of my own understanding. You find your own, but my God, there's no way I'd leave my house without checking in any more than I would without my pants on. I mean, I may be an alcoholic, but I ain't stupid. You know what I mean? That's a big change. I would hate me. I was telling my girlfriend, like, listen to me talk in meetings sometimes. I'm like, man, I would hate me in 95. I hate that kind of dude. And I tell you what, when I arrived here in AA, I would have traded places with anybody in here. Man, woman, old, any color, gay. That's how bad I would have traded places with anyone. And there's no place I wanted to be. I never wanted to be anywhere near this place. I hated you guys. And today, tonight, there's no person I'd rather be than me. And there's no place I'd rather be than here with you. And I mean that. That's a big change, isn't it? Thank you. All right, so I'm going to probably try to close this up a little bit. I love Visalia. I've been kicked out of the double L a couple of times. One time it was so foggy, and there was no Uber. This Uber thing, I don't know how, you know, this Uber thing. God, what was that? It wouldn't have mattered anyways. I like to drive. I do. You know what I mean? Take my keys, babe, 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 babe. Take my keys no matter what I say. Babe, give me my keys. It's my car. We're not fooling around. I got kicked out of Double L and almost froze out in that dirt lot because I got lost walking down a lover's lane. Smart guy. Yeah, smart guy. Today is good. I have a 23-year-old son who graduated from Fresno State. I have a 17-year-old daughter who is a senior at Buchanan. And I'll tell you this last story. It's been 9 years since I thought a drink was okay. I was at a paintball tournament in Las Vegas. I was sober 13 years. I hadn't been in a meeting in about a year. That beautiful little Asian lady that did everything she could to help me, that I would have done anything to be with. I was cheating on her in sobriety, coming to meetings, talking to you about how spiritual I was. You know, a year away from a meeting, I had found another power greater than myself, paintball all over again. And you could do that around here. Trust me. That's my experience. You can find power in all kinds of stuff, but it never lasted. I was in Las Vegas with my dream team, one injury away from making it to the show. They call it the show just like in baseball. One dude gets hurt, Thomas gets to play. You know? And the Heinekens came out and I took a drink. Almost two years later, I walked about 3 miles from my condo, barefooted, into my daughter's fourth grade class. I just told you she's 17 now. And told her she didn't belong to me. And that drink in Las Vegas was 2 years before that. In my mind, my great mind, with all my vast knowledge of AA, with my friendship with Bill Noble, with my spiritual awakening, with all the things that I had done, the best thing I could come up with was, it'll be okay. It wasn't. I don't remember that. The police report said that Thomas was confused and dirty. I was barefooted. My feet were as black as that guy's T-shirt. And that's where I ended up the last time I drank. And then I said for the first 3 years back, when I came to AA, blah, 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 blah. And then I would go to some other meeting and say, well, you know, when I first came to AA, I didn't come to AA. My mom pulled up in her little Bronco and opened the door. Big difference between coming to AA and being brought, dude. I was brought to AA. Luckily, and I'm really, really glad to be here. So if you're new or even if you're not, stick around for the meeting after the meeting. Pay attention. Be on time. Rollerblade if you want to. Find something to hold on here. And keep coming back. Thank you for having me come.